And welcome back. Now to Illinois and the state of the state. As you heard last evening on St. Louis Public Radio, Governor Pat Quinn went before the Illinois legislature yesterday to deliver the annual State of the State address. He hit a lot of hot buttons. Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky joins us now to review that speech. Amanda, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Nice to talk to you again. What's your headline?
You know, there really was no takeaway headline, I would say, from this speech, other than what wasn't there. Governor Pat Quinn did touch on what I think Illinois has become most well known for these days, perhaps its pension problem, and again, assessed the need, he said, for Illinois to do something about it, Illinois' pension debt approaching $100 billion. But he didn't really come forward with anything new in that regard. So that may be the headline. Other than that, you kind of got a laundry list. He has a whole lot of ideas.
Before Amanda, I don't mean to interrupt, but before we move on to that, we have a very short clip of the governor on pensions. Let's play that, and then we can continue.
We simply must act. Our vision for our Illinois cannot be fully realized without pension reform. This problem cannot be delayed, deferred, or delegated to the next session or to the next generation.
That's Governor Pat Quinn of Illinois. And Amanda, I was surprised in his speech that he didn't spend more time on that issue.
You know, do bear in mind that the governor has another major speech coming up in less than a month. On March 6th, he's set to give his budget address. So obviously that may be a time where we'll hear more about it, given that pensions are a budgetary issue. But just listening to that clip, it did strike me that that's pretty much, I'm not going to say verbatim, but if we went back and did an overlay of his last budget speech and his last State of the State address, I'm guessing that we would have heard very similar words, and we could have just laid those tracks on top of one another and played them. It's a call that Quinn has issued before, and clearly we saw the legislature, yes, adjourn in January, just last month, without having done anything about it, and now we're back again. And so there was really nothing in Quinn's speech, I think, from what legislators seem to say, that will change things going forward.
People outside of Illinois may not really appreciate just how significant a problem this is for state government.
I know pensions, unless you're a state worker, a university employee, a teacher in a public school that is set to receive this package of retirement benefits, it probably doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But where it really comes to bear is that the more Illinois has to put towards its pensions and this pension debt, the less money there is for other needs. And so there are all sorts of, you know, graphs and organizations that study this that say how Illinois will be spending more on retirement benefits than it does on education, how more and more of the budget will be eaten up, or as Quinn likes to say with his cartoon python character as his symbol, it's squeezing out other state needs.
You know, I interrupted you a moment ago when you wanted to continue on beyond pensions. Let me play another clip from Governor Quinn to change direction here somewhat. He also had, as most executives, if you will, government officials across the country do, have comments with regard to the issue of guns and gun control. Let's listen to what he had to say about that.
Of course, we must abide by the Second Amendment, but there is no place in our state for military-style assault weapons designed for rapid fire at human targets at close range. We must ensure that guns are kept out of everyday public places, because guns don't belong in our schools, shopping malls, or sports stadiums.
Again, Governor Quinn. Amanda, your reaction to that and the reaction you sensed from legislators.
You know, this is a very divided issue in Illinois, and more than anything, I think it's a regional one. In Chicago, of course, there has been a lot of gun violence, and the city has tried to keep a very tight rein on guns, unsuccessfully, I think many would say. Downstate, there are a lot of hunters, and for them, it's a hobby, it's a sport. And so Illinois is in a very interesting position, as much of the country, of course, and the federal government is looking at gun control measures. Illinois is as well. But on top of it, Illinois had been, and at this point, continues to be the only state that completely bans any form of concealed carry. So people can't carry guns in public. That has to change by June due to a federal court order, unless something changes. The attorney general is trying to get a rehearing on that issue. But that's where you kind of have this odd juxtaposition of gun control. At the same time, Illinois will be forced to allow individuals to carry guns in public. So Quinn has always been fairly adamant on his stance. He's wanted an assault weapons ban and has tried for that in the past. So again, this wasn't necessarily surprising in his speech at all, and he didn't lay out a platform. That was pretty much all that he said on the topic, that and, you know, a few other lines about how tragic these recent events have been. I will add that House Speaker Mike Madigan did announce today that the Illinois House Judiciary Committee will hold at least two hearings on gun control matters, and those could last quite some time, I would imagine, and he says he wants an opportunity for a full vetting of the matter before any legislation goes forward.
You mentioned the difference in views from upstate and the Chicago area in particular and downstate. Of course, this whole recent discussion has been wrapped around that very, very tragic shooting of the young student, the 15-year-old, who had just attended President Obama's inauguration, her shooting amongst a group of friends in Chicago.
Exactly. And like I said, in Chicago, the situation there has really gotten out of control and is tragic. And you look at some individuals that they say this shows the need for more gun control on a national basis. There have been studies that a lot of the perpetrators of these gun crimes in Chicago got them from other states, because Illinois, in Chicago in particular, has such tight restrictions. You'll hear critics on the other side say that, look, Chicago does have such gun control, and look at what's happening. Clearly, it isn't working. So there is talk about caps on magazines, again, assault weapons, the question, of course, being what counts, what is the definition of an assault weapon, and I think some opportunity perhaps at these coming hearings, which will be held later this month, to look at any new ideas.
State of the state addresses generally are pretty much a recitation by the chief executive of their own accomplishments during the last year. This certainly was no exception. However, it's prompted a lot of comment I've seen in Illinois newspapers and Chicago papers that this is really kind of a preamble to his election bid in 2014. Is that what it's all about?
That was very much how the speech was viewed. As I said, Quinn kind of gave a laundry list of ideas, and I think that is widely seen as something that a candidate would do, introduce a lot of programs that would look good. So trying to touch on a lot of proposals that would reach out and make various particularly Democratic and liberal constituencies that he'll want to be in favor with. So everything from raising the minimum wage, a lot of talk about trying to improve the job market for veterans, increasing the number of developmentally disabled that have jobs, talking about some new manufacturing lab that will be part of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, but located in Chicago. So really, it ran the gamut and touched on all of these various plans. And interestingly, looking forward to that 2014, right in the front row there is Attorney General Lisa Madigan, who, of course, is seen as a potential challenger. And she was asked about it yesterday and did not come right out and say and making the announcement that she's running for governor, but she sure as heck did not say no to that suggestion. So a lot of talk that, yes, this was Quinn's almost a campaign kickoff and a very important speech for him, but also that this could very much set the tone for all of the session, this dynamic of Quinn maybe looking over his shoulder or in front of him at challengers, Madigan being a primary one, a whole lot of Republicans, including Republicans who were also there listening to his speech in the Senate.
Has there been any more discussion about the potential of a Bill Daley of the famous Daley family's candidacy, former White House chief of staff?
Just that discussion. I think Daley is in the same vein as Lisa Madigan. He is probably appreciating the talk would be my guess. But he has not come out and declared candidacy, but he definitely hasn't said no. So it includes to be kind of a specter hanging out.
Yeah, you know, while we're talking about election potential, a couple of the things that the governor mentioned in his speech relate directly to that. He's proposing open primaries and online voter registration. Getting any traction early on?
Early on, no. And again, I think this was a criticism of Quinn's speech and a criticism of his leadership in general. Some may say that it's appropriate in a speech to not give a ton of detail. The issue with Governor Pat Quinn and his administration being that often it never comes, and this may be the last that we will hear of it, or at least we won't hear much more. He did talk, as you said, about both of those things. It's unclear if that'll go anywhere. There have been plenty of talk or suggestion that Illinois voters would to change the law so that they would not have to declare whether they're a Republican or a Democrat when voting in a primary. That has never gone anywhere in the past because, of course, parties and Democrats right now, they're in control and have been and have pretty tight control, see that as an advantage. So I'm not sure if that will go forward or if the very powerful House Speaker and Senate President would allow that to. Voter registration, maybe really, again, that's all that we heard.
The another issue that I think people are paying some attention to is driver's licenses for the undocumented in Illinois.
Yes, and that is a measure that was just signed into law. It hasn't been rolled out yet. It's going to take the Secretary of State several months to get the program itself up and running. But that was a pretty major change of events, and a lot of Latinos and actually other immigrants from other communities celebrating that. That was a bipartisan effort in Illinois. I think that is an extension of the last election. So looking forward again to the next one in 2014, I'm sure that we will see more reaching out to Latino voters there.
Do you have any figure on the suspected number of undocumented people in Illinois?
You know, I'm not sure off the top of my head of the number of undocumented individuals, but I do believe that the number is 250,000 illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants are believed to be driving on Illinois roads. And the issue being that if they're driving and they're not here legally, they obviously don't have any sort of license and they haven't passed any sort of test, and most likely they don't have insurance. So that was very much how this new law was marketed. It, of course, you don't hear from legislators that, oh, we're doing this because we saw such great Latino turnout in the last election. You hear from them that this is going to make roads safer for everyone.
You mentioned earlier the proposed increase in the minimum wage. How big a boost is he talking about?
The governor has proposed raising the minimum wage to $10, up from $8.25 over the next 4 years. Business groups are, of course, as I think you could imagine, right away coming out against that, very strongly opposed. They say Illinois already has the fourth highest minimum wage in the nation, higher than the federal minimum wage, and that this will continue to chase jobs out of Illinois. I did have to say that I personally did find it ironic that you had on one page, Quinn, here's a quote from him saying that, that driving economic growth for small businesses requires doing all we can to make sure government is not in the way. And then just moments later discussing the hike in the minimum wage. Advocates, of course, saying that that is for a very good reason, that when you raise the wage for these workers who, you know, trying in an attempt to make it a living wage, that these are people who spend money, unlike wealthy individuals who keep it in the bank, put it in stocks, what have you. When you raise the minimum wage on these lower income individuals, they'll be spending it. They'll be going to the grocery store. They'll be buying new clothes.
On the other hand, the small shopkeepers are saying that they can't afford it, that it's too much, that some will be put out of business.
very much so. And exactly. I know I've sat through hearings. This is the first time that a minimum wage has been addressed. And actually, a senator from Chicago, Kim Lightford, has been talking about this as well. And it's unclear. Quinn says that he is working with her. It's unclear if he'll want that specific plan to go forward. But again, calling for this $10 wage hike. He also talked during his speech about some successes that he claims in terms of reforms or changes Illinois made to what he noted as a burdensome worker compensation system. And yet that is something else that you speak with the business community and they say, oh, no, no, no. Yes, there was change, but Illinois still isn't done. The business community really saying that Illinois isn't helping itself right now, despite the governor's adamant description of himself as all about jobs and that being his number one goal. Sometimes I guess pensions is his number one goal too. He changes that and rotates. But business is saying that no, it's not working.
You know, you mentioned earlier that it's a Democrat-controlled legislature. How would you characterize the governor's relationship with Democrats in the legislature?
It's interesting to watch, particularly during speeches like this, because you look at Democrats federally, and generally it seems as if, you know, no matter what, supporting in some way, shape, or fashion President Barack Obama, Democrats, Democrats. I don't think you get that same feeling here. I did speak with a senator yesterday who said, of course, he's a Democrat. I'm going to support him. And yet, on the other side of his mouth, he and many other Democrats also saying, well, Quinn didn't do this. Quinn does not have a very close relationship with really anyone in the legislature. He never served as a legislator himself, and that has continued to, I think, be a challenge for him. Also, you, as I indicated, there are very powerful leaders of the Illinois House and Senate, and with right now supermajorities after the last election, they have even more control than ever before, and even more members who are indebted to them via campaign contributions that landed these senators and representatives in the General Assembly in the first place. So I think that on the outside, they try and project somewhat an image of at least congeniality or that they're Democrats and they're in it together, and you'll see in situations such as, again, the temporary driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, they're coming together. I don't think, however, behind closed doors there is a lot of goodwill. From what I hear, a lot of the meetings are tense, and there are leaders who maybe don't give Pat Quinn the respect that I think he very clearly wants. And sometimes you see that chip on his shoulder coming out in public.
So he's considered something of an outsider, all of this complicated by the manner in which he became governor, I suppose.
I think it is complicated with that. Or actually, you know, my kind of inside take on things is that Quinn really had an opportunity when he came in. People were very excited, I think, all over the state, but particularly in the General Assembly, because Rod Blagojevich, whereas he had been in the Illinois House and served in Congress as well, he also did not have a great relationship with the General Assembly. The difference with Blagojevich being he did have a handful of legislators that he was very, very closely allied with and that he could count on to carry his weight in the General Assembly that Quinn does not have. Nonetheless, when Quinn took over from Blagojevich, people were so ready for that to be a chapter gone and closed. And I think really a lot of people were ready for Pat Quinn and for a guy who is seen as a good guy. I'm not sure that he really capitalized on that at that point in time. Maybe that would have been the time to have done a tax hike or to kind of push through some of these measures. Instead, I think he's largely still is seen as a nice guy, but one who, of course, like other politicians, wants to win, one who does have vendettas and plays the political game, and one who is an ineffectual manager as well.
Another of the issues that he brought up yesterday that we should talk about for a moment is marriage equality. Where does he stand on that? And again, what is the likely response to whatever proposals he's making?
You know, even when it is clear that the governor supports a particular piece of legislation or an issue, he generally won't come right out and say that he's going to sign it. This is an exception. He has been very clear that this is a law that he would gladly give his signature to were any bill to get to his desk. There evidently are still negotiations continuing. There is some concern from even there are some Republicans that I think are considering supporting this, but so far they haven't been because they see as a major issue that churches would, if, for instance, a church has a an intramural basketball team, or they rent out a room for a piano teacher to give lessons in, that would open the church up to being forced to also be a place that would host same-sex marriages. So that is an issue that still is being worked out. Nonetheless, you have heard from the Democratic Senate president that he is hopeful to get a gay marriage bill passed out of that chamber on Valentine's Day of next week.
Illinois does have civil unions now, correct?
Yes, Illinois does, and so that is going forward. And, you know, it was said at the time by critics of civil unions that this will just be used as a path to gay marriage. You saw advocates of same-sex marriage saying, well, yes, as soon as this is done, that is exactly what we are going to work for. Civil unions, of course, guaranteeing a lot of same-sex couples. Some of the what I think a lot of people may consider the more important things, such as being allowed into a hospital room with a loved one because there is a legal relationship there. Nonetheless, separate but unequal, and there are some issues that advocates of gay marriage say, no, it's just not the same. We want full equality. We want marriage.
One of the contentious issues in Jefferson City here in Missouri is the issue of Medicaid and tied in with the health care proposals, the Affordable Care Act. And that came up during his address yesterday as well.
Yes, and yet again, his remarks were very brief. And nonetheless, he did say that he wants Illinois to go forward and establish what's known as an exchange. Basically, that'll be the marketplace where individuals without insurance now will be able to purchase it. He did not say what he wants on that exchange, and that continues to be an issue where insurance companies are battling with healthcare advocates saying that they want insurance companies to have a lesser role in how this works, insurance companies, of course, wanting a greater one. And then also, as you said, Medicaid. Illinois already has a fairly robust Medicaid program, but did last year make a lot of cuts in that to what is provided for limits, for instance, on prescription drugs, limits on the number of, say, prescription glasses an individual could get, on a motorized wheelchair. And at that time, actually passed a moratorium on Medicaid expansion. That, of course, now you're seeing particularly Democrats wanting to overturn and go back on that and expanding Medicaid to individuals who are low income, so 133% of the poverty line, or individuals making about $15,000 a year who are childless, and giving them Medicaid for the first time. That remains a debate here in Illinois.
You know, I noticed in a couple of papers that much was made of the fact that he used a teleprompter again this year. I guess kind of tongue-in-cheek, because he had a bad year a couple of years ago without one, right?
Yes, when he proclaimed himself the soy boy. I'm not sure any governor has ever used that particular moniker on himself before. And that was the time that the governor just had a legal pad of notes and just kind of ran all over the place. So a lot of people, despite as I've given a lot of the criticisms of his speech, nonetheless, a lot of people saying, yes, for Pat Quinn, this really was one of his better speeches. It appeared to me clear that he had rehearsed it. He was slow in giving it. I'm still not sure he is great at making clear when it's time for applause, or perhaps it's just the message that he is giving, or who he is, that he does not get a lot of standing ovations or robust claps. But yes, it was definitely a speech that was practiced, and I think clearly, whereas, again, it was this kind of laundry list, it hit all the right notes. There was a flow, there were transitions, and that was very much unlike that particular legal pad here.
And just in 30 seconds left, the refrain throughout the speech seemed to be, hard is not impossible. It sounds like a pretty good campaign slogan as we move toward 2014.
very much so. Political courage is what the governor is trying to get legislators on with, and I think he'd like to be seen as a man and a governor of political courage.
Well, Amanda Vinicky, we want to thank you so much for being with us. You're always so very well informed about things that are going on in your state and in your backyard there, and we appreciate the opportunity to share that expertise with us. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for letting me talk about it.
That is Amanda Vinicky. She is the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, is stationed in Springfield, Illinois. Well, we're not back tomorrow. Tomorrow is Cityscape Day, and Steve Potter, of course, will be along for that. And let's see what Steve's got going. He is going to be talking with Paula Poundstone about her performance in St. Louis and about the St. Louis Symphony's 2013-2014 season. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we invite you to attend the St. Louis Mayoral Primary Forum right here in the community room of our new home at Umsel at Grand Center. Incumbent Mayor Francis Slay, Aldermanic President Louis Reed, and former St. Louis Alderman Jimmy Matthews will participate in that forum. I will moderate the discussion. We'll also have an opportunity for questions from you. This program is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, production assistants from Aaron Doerr, Spencer Reed, and Drew Baker. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Don Marsh.